Welcome to the Pint and Click podcast. I'm Dave. I'm here with Charlie and Joel and Tony, and we're here to talk about Oscar movies. The best pictures, the best actors, the best actresses, everything we can talk about. We've seen as many movies as we can in the short time since the nominations have been announced, but I think we've got a pretty good idea. I'm here to talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, what is interesting, what is fascinating, what is overwhelming, and what is maybe a little boring once in a while, because I've got a couple movies that did not spark my interest. But we're going to start things off with Black Panther, because I think most of us saw that. We had a podcast about that. I am delighted to see Black Panther nominated. For one, it's production design it's nominated, and I'm pulling for that almost harder than I'm pulling for Best Picture. I want Black Panther to win Best Production Design, because that was incredible. Those sets with the waterfalls, the costuming, and the sense of Wakanda as a real place. It was amazing work, I felt.
I think many people were going to look at this list of nominees and think, oh, Black Panther as a Marvel movie made it to Best Picture. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people's eyes glaze over when they think about Marvel movies and just there's so many. And, of course, we've talked about it on the podcast. In fact, maybe the last three podcasts we've done, we've mentioned Marvel movies. But yeah, this one is different. And I think, you know, a big reminder here and a good thing, I'm happy we're starting with it, is because it has the workings of a movie that tells a narrative in a way only Marvel can, because it's taking this really unique narrative about this place, but also about it standing in contrast to the world we live in. And yep, go back and listen to our podcast on it. But I'm really happy to see it as part of Best Picture as well, because, you know, if you look at some of the other nominations, it definitely belongs on this list for this year. It's really great. So
kind of reminds me of Return of the King, way back when Fellowship of the Ring got like one nomination, or one win, I mean, for graphics or special effects. I mean, Two Towers, I don't think, won anything. And then Return of the King comes out and they're like, all right, you've earned this. Here's all the awards that year. And I kind of feel like Black Panther is kind of that same thing. It was like, these movies have been really good and it's time to get recognized for one. And this is the one that's right place, right time. Great movie.
I feel that it stood out, again, in the Marvel context. It stood out beyond, oh, this is a superhero, whatever it had, as you said, Tony. It was grounded in our society today and kind of highlighted an issue, you know, and cast a reflection of what actual societies look like.
Right.
It was a little bit more of a crisp movie in that direction. And I think that's what also what helped it earn a Best Picture nod versus, I know you like Iron Man 2, you know, but versus Iron Man 2 or even Thor Ragnarok or something like that. It was a fun movie. Not much that people can relate to with a garbage world and whatever planet that was.
And Forge. Yeah, exactly.
And Asgard as well. Not that Asgard is the garbage world, but the two different worlds.
Right. Yeah, it's Wakanda has struck a nerve and Killmonger struck a nerve. People were like, this guy's not wrong. Maybe he is. I mean, he's killing people. That's bad. But, you know, his philosophy.
You can see where he's coming
compelling.
From.
Compelling. Yeah. So it's like a much richer villain than any Marvel movie I think we've ever had in Michael B. Jordan as Killmonger.
Right.
Unfortunately, he didn't make the list, right? A supporting role, actor in a supporting role, did not. No.
And also the beginning and ending and grounding in Oakland, I believe.
Yeah.
Maybe Spider-Man might be the same way, like starting in Queens, just kind of revealing casting life in that respect. But I just think that, you know, highlighting the Wakanda and Oakland and the performances all around set it apart.
So I'm really pulling for Black Panther for production design, as I said. Is there anything that you're really pulling for, one that really struck you? The other one that gets me is Vice, Christian Bale as Dick Cheney in Vice. That's one I'm really pulling for, because that knocked me out. I saw Vice at like midnight last night trying to cram it in just before the podcast. The movie's all right. I'm not blown away by it. I'm thinking of older Best Pictures that, like, when I walked out of Birdman and I walked out of Argo, I was like, that was something. Like, that was surprising and interesting and overwhelming and compelling and all of these things. And Vice was like, yeah, it was interesting at parts. It had a couple of compelling moments to it. But I didn't see Christian Bale, so to speak, right? I just saw Dick Cheney on the screen, kind of like Lincoln. You know, it felt like, I think this, you made this point, Joel, is like it was President Lincoln surrounded by a bunch of actors in that movie. I kind of feel this way about Vice. Like, it was
the closest
Dick Cheney
you'll ever get to meeting Lincoln was seen on the screen. But Or even last year with Gary Oldman as Churchill.
Churchill, yeah.
I completely forgot I was watching Gary Oldman act. I thought I was watching Churchill do something in that role. Without having seen it, another one that I'm really pulling for is sound editing with A Quiet Place. I have not seen it, but I understand the concept of it.
Sure.
And I would like to see it because of my understanding of the concept. And I hope that they can reward that kind of original idea with that movie. That's my thought on that.
I'm gonna jump in here and say, like, I kind of feel this year's a little soft. Like, I was hoping for something big to just blow my socks off, but the best pictures I've seen have been pretty good. I love the acting of Christian Bale, and I loved Amy Adams in that movie as well. But Sam Rockwell's nominated for Vice for playing George W. I thought it was his performance was good, but he was in like three scenes and that's it. And it's like, you get a nomination for 6 minutes of screen time? Like,
maybe they're, he won it last year, so he's like defending his title.
Maybe. Is that how it works now?
I mean, there's a lot of originality in these Best Picture nominations. That those are some of the ones that are jumping out at me. Originality in that, like, they're telling narratives that you don't really see on this stage. The Favorite is really a fascinating movie, and we can talk more about it because I know Charlie's also seen The Favorite.
Yeah, and Joel, you've also seen it.
Yeah, right?
But yeah, that one's jumping out at me. And then, of course, the two nominations in there for actress in a supporting role.
Yeah, actress, it's Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz. Both for a supporting role, yeah.
Which is kind of interesting that they're competing for the same award,
the same movie,
which is also what they're
doing in the movie.
In the movie,
yeah.
But yeah, it's a fascinating movie to watch, and it's hard to describe exactly why it's so good just because I don't want to get into too much specifics to like ruin it. I would just say that it seems like the plot is so character-driven that you are more concerned about people's actions and consequences and their well-being and their whether it's, you know, Emma Stone as – I feel like she's kind of portrayed as the protagonist at the start of the movie, but you slowly realize that perhaps she's the one that is being more of like an invading personality and encroaching on this territory, and that's kind of the main conflict of the story.
Right. I mean, it does definitely bring to mind the question of what is a leading role, what is a supporting role, because it seems that Olivia Colman, Rachel Weisz, and Emma Stone are all kind of equals in that film. Certainly, the two who are listed as supporting are subservient to the queen because, well, she's the queen, but the plot would not exist without any one of them. Like, it's all about the power dynamic between them all. So, yeah, I'm not sure exactly what the Academy's framework for determining what a supporting and what a leading role is, how many minutes of screen time you need, you know?
It'll be interesting to understand the definition of how they see it, right?
Yeah.
You know, as dry as you think of a historically set humor, dark comedy could be, I think that there is like...
Extremely dark.
Yeah, it's extremely dark.
Right.
And you often question whether you should be...
Exactly.
You know, reacting the way you're reacting to some of the things.
Right, because it starts off pretty lighthearted, but as the film progresses, the stakes seem to raise and you're very worried about the characters and, as you said, the consequences. But it being a dry British film, there's always something about just a turn of phrase or a gesture that is pretty darn funny. So I guess Oscars don't determine films by genre, but I think that it was nominated for maybe a Golden Globe of Best Comedy or...
Yeah, Golden Globe splits into drama and then musical or comedy.
And again, The Favorite seems like it could very well be argued as either a drama or a comedy.
Right. As you're watching, it unsettles you. It's not a popcorn movie. It's one to watch to get challenged.
Right.
And the discordant chords in the movie and just the cinematography.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of extreme angles, which is why it seems kind of interesting that it was also nominated for Best Cinematography. Although I will say, when I saw it in the theater, I was in the very front row, so my neck was kind of craned in a weird angle, and I wasn't sure how much of the extreme fisheye-type camera work was just me in an unfortunate place in the theater. But it did seem like the angles got more extreme as Queen Anne's physical ailments got more pronounced. I thought that was an interesting artistic choice.
Yeah.
So it's well placed in the Best Picture nominee. I think so too.
Yeah,
this sounds – I'm the one who hasn't seen it, but you're making some pretty compelling points. Like, I'm going to have to squeeze it in as soon as I can, it sounds like, because this sounds like is this the one that we're most enthusiastic about for Best Picture? Is there one that you would prefer over this, or is the favorite, so to speak? I'm sure someone's used that joke before.
Sure.
Having not seen a lot of them, I am rooting for the favorite. I do like how, as a historical film, it kind of plays fast and loose with what's historically verifiable, without getting into too much of the plot. Like, there's quite a few easily debunkable elements to the plot and quite a few that can't really be verified one way or the other. And so it's interesting. And I think that not being tied to documentary fact makes it more lively. And, you know, at times I forgot that it was set in the 18th century because the characterization was that strong.
It was.
Same, yeah.
Yeah. The banter, the repartee, the... Yeah, it was...
When, and talk about, like, watching a trailer and getting some of the comedy into taste for, like, some of the scenes. This is one of those trailers that takes actual snippets from the movie and puts them on the trailer. But then when you see it in context to get a completely... Sometimes 180, but a completely different view of what that scene was in the trailer versus what you are actually watching. And the same gesture, the same even like scoff or something like that can mean a lot more to both parties. You know, there's a lot to look at here. And just, I mean, the acting especially was just, yeah, like really, really compelling. And there were deep, deep layers of things to appreciate here.
Yeah.
So to answer that question, though, I actually do think The Favorite is one of my favorites on the list. I think Black Klansman was also a really good one. I don't know if anyone else has seen that
I've
one.
I've seen that one. Yeah.
Yeah, I was really impressed by that movie. I don't know what to say about it other than, oh my gosh, go see this movie.
Yeah, it was very compelling for a number of reasons. I adore Adam Driver. I think I've said it before and I'll say it again. I really enjoyed his performance in this movie. There's a lot of tension in this movie, kind of invoking Argo again, which is just like you're constantly worried about these people and these characters and what they're up against because it's a...
And violence, yeah. And you're just, violence could just happen at the drop of a hat. Sorry,
from someone you wouldn't expect to perpetrate that violence.
Sure. So in that way, it's very compelling and it's also... very relevant to today, which is a point they kind of drive home at the end, that the acts of the Klan at the time were awful, and they try to put it into a human context in the movie, and then it's like, well, these acts of domestic terrorism continue today, and they continue to be awful, and they continue to put it in a human perspective. But that layered on the fact that it's funny oftentimes. The movie's not jokes, but just, you know, I feel like the police officers oscillate between very, very serious and very, very vulnerable. And then they have to blow off that steam. And they blow off that steam by making jokes with each other, at each other, whatever. And so, like, those moments of release come to the audience as they come to the actors and the characters as well. And so really well-paced. Every scene has a purpose and every scene has some sort of emotional component to it. Like, this is a scene where you're supposed to feel scared. This is a scene where you're supposed to relax. This is the scene where you're supposed to internalize the plot so far or relate to a character or...
Sorry to interrupt, but some of the scenes also take you to a more intellectual place where it's talking about history and it's talking about... The scene I'm thinking of is when they're walking up the bridge and they're discussing philosophy. You know?
Right.
And it takes you to a very, very intellectual place.
Yeah.
So, and I think they do an amazing job as well of telling the two sides of the story, because this is an undercover situation of having your partner's back, listening in. When is that moment where the bailout moment kind of thing? And those are those instances of like tension. And they do it at multiple points, but it's used sparingly so that when they do jar you back and forth, it's used to great effect.
Yeah, Black Klansman. If I were choosing best picture of what I've seen so far, that would easily be my choice. I'm not saying it's going to win. I think A Star Is Born is going to win just because I'm kind of Hollywood cynical. Like, oh, they're going to pick the one with the...
musical.
The musical with the famous actors and the...
Although, you know, will Bradley Cooper finally... Is Bradley Cooper one of those...
constantly snubbed actors?
Right.
Yeah, like Leo or something like that, finally winning after
Martin.
Yeah.
And Scorsese, you know? Yeah. And I don't know. So anyway, continue on. I'm sorry.
Star is Born has so many nominations too, which is often... I read a discussion about Oscar nominees, and if you've got a lot of nominations in a lot of categories, often you're more likely to win, as opposed to just like a Best Picture all by itself, kind of hanging there with nothing else to back it up, I guess, which is kind of Black Panther's place. Like, it doesn't have a nominee for actor or actress. It doesn't have a nominee for much other than production design and the song and sound the soundtrack, right?
The costume design.
There's a few, sound mixing, sound editing.
Yeah. But it's not cinematography, it's not for directing, so...
Maybe not the ones that get a lot of the actual airtime in the ceremony.
Right, right. Yeah, Black Klansman, that's probably my favorite so far. I definitely recommend it. I'm surprised it didn't get more nominations, because I thought the acting was very good. As opposed to, like... Vice, which I previously described as Dick Cheney surrounded by a bunch of actors, like Black Klansman felt like no one was an actor. They were all compelling in that way. I want to jump to animated feature film for a minute because Isle of Dogs totally sucked me in.
You liked it.
I very much enjoyed that movie. I didn't think I would, but I was absolutely wrong. Like, my wife put it on, and I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to like this. And then, like, I couldn't move. I couldn't look away. I couldn't get out of my chair. Like, that was – and I have not seen Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which is shocking.
I'm shocked.
To people who follow my interests. I adore Spider-Man, and I have not seen that yet, although I've heard phenomenal things. So I'm kind of got a horse in that race, an animated feature. Like, I love Isle of Dogs. Maybe I'll see Spider-Man, and it's twice as good, and I'll take back my pick. But I really would like to see Isle of Dogs win. So far, I'll say. I'm not going to commit because I haven't seen Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Yeah. But
I thought it was pretty good. I don't know. For some reason, it wasn't, like, as fun as, like, the Fantastic Mr. Fox or something like that, which is another – but. It felt like it was less of a kid's movie and more of like, I'm just along for the ride for this kind of wacky movie.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I guess, one of the things I liked about it.
Yeah.
It's kind of just a wacky Wes Anderson movie.
It's stop motion animated. So I don't know if you would say set design or not, but if you did, that's like the strongest part, I think, of the movie is the design of the island itself. And looking just like piles of garbage everywhere, and but people's rooms, their offices, things like that were just meticulously, items were placed in a very compelling visual style. I don't know. But it was. It just felt...
Yeah, there were some surreal elements, like dreamlike elements, where they do just a silhouette, and like you'd get a great sense of space if someone climbed up, you know, and... Using stop motion in that way was something totally new, and like I enjoyed how you'd often get these shots right looking right at the stop animation dog and get their thoughts or get them talking. And that was always really interesting too. I mean, it's it was the type of film where you put it on and you are kind of sucked into the world. And that's
sort of a Wes Anderson trademark. It's sort of creating a space that you can sort of luxuriate in.
And the voice acting was great. Something about Into the Spider-Verse, the voice acting from the trailers does not sit right with me. I don't know why. I don't know what it is. But Isle of Dogs, the voice acting, I think was tremendous.
I loved Into the Spider-Verse, and I'm sure you've heard it from a lot of your friends. But I think we should almost just do it as its own podcast. If we're into it. Exactly. That's a solid addition to the Marvel
Spider world.
Thank you.
What else? Anyone else got one they want to shout out?
I will say I was kind of surprised to see so many nods toward Bohemian Rhapsody because I did not like the movie. And I say this as a pretty large fan of Queen the band. Here's the thing. I'm a big music junkie. I love reading books about music. I love reading magazines. I love listening to the deluxe box sets and all that. Music biopics always sort of hit a wrong chord, to use a pun, for me, because, I mean, I know that it has to be a two-hour movie, and it's going to compress some scenes of time because it's not a 20-year-long movie, and I know that there's got to be some comic relief, and there's got to be caricatured characters, like all of those tropes that, if you've ever seen the John C. Reilly film Walk Hard. That are so brilliantly parodied in that... this film almost seemed Walk Hard-ish in its use of music bio tropes. I don't know how much I can give away. Like, it's hard to do a spoiler, especially for a movie this kind of Wikipedia level deep.
Sure.
But there are some scenes where a good 5 years of history are condensed into an afternoon.
Oh, sure.
And it seems just kind of lazy to me. Also, as a big music fan, I am always looking to, like, that's not the right guitar. That's not the right amplifier. And sure. I think that with the surviving members of Queen on board for this movie as creative consultants, those issues were nowhere to be seen. Like, in the climactic Live Aid scene, that's the right number of Vox AC30 amplifiers stacked on top of the stage. That's the right number of Pepsi products on Freddie Mercury's piano. Like, the devil isn't in the detail. The devil's in the really broad strokes in this movie. I know that when the trailer came out, some fans were kind of up in arms. They perceived Freddie Mercury was being straight-washed, that his gay life wasn't going to be mentioned in the film at all. And that's not the case, but I think that it is so weirdly portrayed that it's almost homophobic. Like, pretty much all of the scenes are just in sort of seedy, debauched truck stops and gay bars. And his wife, Mary Austin, was one of the main characters in the film. And his partner, until the end of his life, Jim Hutton, is basically an afterthought. He's a waiter that he picks up at a debauched party and then doesn't see until the morning of Live Aid when he knocks on his door and takes him to meet his parents. This is the scene I'm talking about where all of the history is condensed into an afternoon. But I think more than anything, there's a scene where Freddie tells his bandmates that he's been diagnosed with HIV, but the show must go on. And then they do Live Aid, and it's, you know, this massive moment. But historically, that's not how it happened. Like, I don't think he was diagnosed until after Live Aid. And that gives this legendary performance this sort of unearned emotional heft, which seems incredibly manipulative to me.
Yeah.
And, like, throughout the movie, I'm trying to think, could they have done that differently? Like, that's the moment where the movie is leading up to, so could they have done that differently?
Certainly, is the answer to that. Could they have done it differently? Yeah, that's unfortunate. I haven't seen it. I've never been compelled by the music biopics. Like, I don't think a single one has really compelled me or fascinated me or anything like that.
And I don't think that very many have been nominated for Oscars since Ray or Walk the Line.
Yeah.
And probably that's because of a lot of these sort of situations where it's not entirely accurate or it seems maybe a niche market. But at the same time, this is, I think this is the highest grossing music biopic of all time.
Oh, okay.
And it's a genuine phenomenon in Korea. Like, people go to this film 5, 6, 7, 8 times, and it's less a movie than a karaoke thing. And I will say, as a Queen fan, going into a theater and listening to these songs at high decibel levels is not a bad way to spend 2 hours. But if it was like a Queen concert film, I would be all in it. But
sure.
Everything about the movie just seems miscalculated. Except the acting. The acting is pretty well done. Rami Malek is definitely a contender for best actor, although some have suggested that his prosthetic teeth do a lot of the acting for him. But it's a lot of these details that are so well done, like John Deacon's ever-changing hairstyles and Brian May's never-changing hairstyles. But the overall movie left me wanting a lot more. So I'm surprised to see it as Best Picture, but that's just me.
Well, that's unfortunate, especially because this is going to be, in a lot of ways, for a young audience or a new audience,
right?
Who wants to learn about Queen. All they know is Bohemian Rhapsody, the song, and they don't know anything else. They don't know about Live Aid. And we're going to be, like, dispelling myths now about Queen and because of this movie.
And I realize now that I'm sort of contradicting myself by praising The Favorite for not hewing to history by the letter, but, you know, I'm more of a Queen historian than I am a Queen historian.
Black Klansmen didn't follow the rails of history exactly either. There was some embellishment to make it more of an interesting movie.
Right. I'm sure the same is true for a Green Book.
Yeah.
And that might be a separate debate. Like, how much of a trusted source are these movies, which are made for entertaining audiences.
Right.
Like, can you argue that they're misleading the public if they're depicting historical scenes not to the letter?
Sure.
Does it make people head to the nonfiction books more?
Like, one would hope.
That. Yeah, you would.
Well, and that's, yeah, and Roma has a very, you know, a historical moment in Mexican history in 1971 where there was a student massacre. It is depicted in this film during the most climactic part of the film, but the events leading up to it give it also a sense of, well, give you guys a little background because I don't know that everyone's really going to see it, but I don't want to spoil anything. The events leading up to it seem like there's a kind of a disaster seem to follow the protagonist around, and you thought maybe that this would just be another one of those disasters that kind of like grazes by and doesn't affect her personally, but it seems like that tragedy now is integral to her whole story. And it's very interesting in that this movie, Roma, actually, even though I knew about this particular event in Mexican history, I didn't actually look at more of the background, and that I realized there's a lot of stories being told that paints the picture of Mexico City at this time. And it's a film kind of as much about this place as it is about her. And, you know, I just think it's fascinating as a film to accomplish that because it's filled with, and it does have a nomination for cinematography, but it's filled with these moments of wide shots and things and multiple things happening just inside the frame, in focus or slightly out of focus. And so you guys will enjoy it if you do get around to it. I'll tell you that it's definitely a slower build like The Favorite, and that you're not quite sure what you're going to be expecting, what you're really getting into. But the pieces line up, and I think it's very deserving. And I think it's Netflix's first Best Picture nomination.
Okay.
It's interesting that we're finding more streaming platforms actually show up on Oscar nominations. Yeah, because that's just like...
For Best Picture, no less.
Right. And it's a foreign film as well, which
is a foreign language film and for, you know, directing and for actress in a supporting. So, like, it's not just a flash. It's got some meat there.
I'd like to mention Green Book, since we alluded to it earlier. It's also a depiction of historical events, and a lot of people have had some issues where they have to maybe dumb down the relationship a little bit between the two characters. And other people have said, if we have to still be watching this film in the 21st century, you know, this should have been shown decades ago. We should be beyond this now.
Right.
And I kind of agree with that. Like, it seemed kind of simplistic and kind of, aren't we proud of ourselves that we have come past this moment in our history? And my question is, have we? You know, so it's enjoyable. I mean, I'm a big Vigo fan. He is incredible in the amount of food he eats in this film.
That's unfortunately not a category, though.
But the point is that they used that to characterize him, and it was just fascinating. And one of the main sources of the character for that film was his son, was the person he's portraying. His actual son filled them in on, okay, my dad did this and did that, and he was like this. And I thought that was kind of interesting. It also made me realize how much I like Mahershala Ali. So he's just wonderful.
And maybe to go back to a previous point, the supporting versus leading role, having seen just the trailer, it seemed that Mahershala Ali was more of a lead actor in this. So it's weird that he's considered the supporting role and Viggo Mortensen's considered lead.
There's a perspective from Viggo's character that I think that's what the tiebreaker, I guess, might have been, where you're focused more on his context versus Mahershala Ali's character's context. So I think that might have been why they did that. But
yeah, just watching the trailer, you think, well, he's just the driver.
Right.
Isn't the piano player the center of the universe?
Well, that's one of the themes. Right. I mean, not to say it wasn't enjoyable. It was a fun film, but maybe not Best Picture worthy. But
you
I can see
more
why
out of Best Picture.
But then again, do we? You know, I used to think of like the Academy, and now I was like, oh, it's the Academy.
Sure,
they'll find a way to put something in,
right?
You know, and I don't mean to sound belittling, but I do sound disappointed. I want to be challenged with film, and sometimes I think that they put stuff in there to. It's a popularity contest.
Right, or a box office contest.
Yes. So something is talked about, then, oh, yeah, we have to put it in there. But on the other hand, they do have Roma. They do have Black Klansman and the Black Panther and The Favorite. So I can't complain too much.
I like how you say you have to, in a sense, that you'd like to be challenged, because I feel like Roma is a movie where it challenges your patience in this in the use of screen time, and it's black and white, mm-hmm. and it puts the credits first. Things like
mm-hmm. yeah.
that challenge you as a viewer to be patient and to observe mm-hmm. and to look at what's on the screen and not just listen for the words and for the sound bites and things like that that you're looking for mm-hmm. out of the big screen. And stop looking for what sells and start looking for the story in there and things like that.
That's the one thing. I try to see all the nominees for Best Picture if I can. And some years I've done better than others. But like I've never had a bad time at a nominee. Like, you know, some are compelling for one reason or another. Who knows? But, like, it's always been a good movie, I feel like. And so I'm always – if you can see the nominees because, mm-hmm. you know, they're there for a reason. I kind of enjoy the scramble between nominees and the ceremony to be like, oh, I got a month. I got to cram in all these great movies. Like,
get your movie pass out.
Yeah. But, yeah, so, like, I'm into the Oscars. I think it's a good time. I'm not – it's not 100% about who wins and who loses for me, but it, for me it's about see all the movies and recognize that a lot of them are good that you did not know about because of marketing or you did not expect to be good because they're on Netflix, and it turns out these are great movies to watch.
Yeah, can we talk about Vice for a little bit?
We can talk about Vice. I'd love to talk about Vice.
The one compelling, the word of the day, aspect of this film is I remember news headlines of everything happening.
Right. It's pretty recent history.
To see what actually happened and from perspective of the boardroom or whatever they call that room at 9/11 and or just even how he created himself, Cheney created himself.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was just really kind of, well, it's one-sided.
Mm-hmm.
And was Adam McKay, is he the director?
Yeah.
The way he tells a story, I thought that was just generally, he kind of removes the fourth wall a little bit.
Yeah, a few times.
I enjoy that aspect.
Yeah.
Of those films.
Yeah, so you're talking about like a couple of times. They cut in images of him fishing quite often.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time it's kind of used as just a chapter break, I feel.
An interlude. Yeah.
But twice it's used to great effect where it's a parallel to his current situation and actions.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of little tricks like that. The narrator to the movie turns out to be a fascinating character.
Mm-hmm.
For a movie about true events that occurred, you know, this man's career and the events of 9/11 and all that, there's a lot of surprises in this movie that one would not expect. And so, like, maybe that's what keeps it interesting, keeps it moving. Surprises not in the plot, but in the execution of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is one of those ones where it's like, I don't think it's best picture, but maybe it's best directing because mm-hmm. it's definitely inspired, if I can use that word,
right.
The way they would juxtapose images or flashbacks to earlier in the movie as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, what's he thinking now? And it's like, oh, he's remembering this thing that happened earlier in the movie and things like that.
Which is a great job of humanizing Cheney.
Mm-hmm.
The one scene, it was very emotionally drawn in and you can completely understand what he's feeling at that moment mm-hmm. by the way that they portray the scene from the earlier in the film when they mm-hmm. project it onto the end of the film. And I think that the fishing interludes, as you mentioned, the fishing scenes really struck me as after the film, and of course the end credits have fishing lures.
Yeah, those are cute. I really like those.
And the but I enjoyed the fishing kind of imagery of scheming in government and laying your plan, putting your line in the water
mm-hmm.
and waiting for some unsuspecting cabinet member or something to come along and to get hooked onto your theme or to your plan.
Yeah.
And, you know, the patience and the oblique secrecy, I guess. Like whenever yeah. I go fishing, I'm always fascinated by the fact that, you know, can the fish see me? I can't see the fish. Like I'm just throwing my line in there to some random netherworld.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And to me, I thought like the government was portrayed as that as well.
Mm-hmm.
It was just some sort of murky deep that only, you know, one person knew how to do it.
Yeah.
And that was and he did not want to be, he couldn't be president, so he would control.
So yeah he took the power instead. If he couldn't have the title, he would impose his will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a very compelling movie.
Any poli-sci major, I think I would highly recommend
sure
watching that.
Steve Carell as Rumsfeld? Like, I didn't even know that till the movie started. It said Steve Carell in the credits, and I'm like, who?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't see him in any trailers, and then it turns out he was a lot of fun.
Hopefully it brings him one step closer to the Blagojevich biopic that I really want to be best picture next year.
It's just waiting to happen. I agree. Yeah. It's talk about larger than life.
Yeah, scenes of Chaney fishing and with his family juxtaposed with making a power move in the halls of the White House. I think there is a scene where he does something terrible and then it just cuts to him and his family laughing in a fishing boat.
Talk about dark humor.
Yeah.
It makes me want to laugh and cry at the same time.
Yeah, again, not my favorite movie, not my pick for Best Picture, but still a good movie. Mm. I'm glad I saw it.
You know, often what happens when we discuss these movies, I like them more.
More is revealed.
You just kind of dwell in it more, I guess. But
yeah, it makes me want to rent some of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are most of these out on DVD yet?
I wouldn't say most. Black Panther very much is. Black Klansman is out. Roma is on Netflix, if you have a subscription to that. The others, I think, are still unavailable.
Yeah, soon. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. In theaters. And Black Klansman's in theaters. Yeah. Okay. Again, they put it back
in. AMC is even doing some weekend where you can watch all eight of them.
Every year.
Four of them on Saturday and four of them on Sunday.
One you can't watch, I believe.
If I didn't work weekends, I would absolutely be into that.
Well, that's big news because they're only showing eight of the nine. Mm. And Roma? I believe they won't show.
Oh, they can't show.
Because whatever.
Licensing, whatever's.
AMC always seems to be angry at somebody or something.
They're angry at MoviePass or angry at Netflix.
And now we can see why they're angry at MoviePass because of their own product. But can I take a moment also to mention that did anyone see First Man?
No.
I did not.
Okay. I would feel remiss not mentioning First Man as possibly a 10th Best Picture nominee. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for a movie that you would think would be in action but is not so much of an action, it's more of like it happens in someone's head. And it's more of a thought piece. So maybe not a lot of people are looking for movies they think were action, but are really surprised by thought piece. But that's what that turned out to be. Mm. I thought that the actor who played Armstrong.
Ryan Gosling,
yes. I thought he was great. Maybe he was the 6th Best Actor nominee. I don't know. The last cut. And it was a very compelling story as well. It's not just, some guy did this and landed on. There's a lot more to it.
Sure.
And whether truth be not, truth or not, if it's in a book, does it have to be absolutely 100%? Because you could just read the book then.
Sure.
Whereas these movies are their own narratives. And I have to remember that because I get angry when they're not, they did this, especially with history.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Armstrong, it may not have been this precise way, but I thought it was well done in the way that it was written.
Hmm.
Had a nice payoff to it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any more? You want to do shout-outs for Best Picture? What do you want to win? I would love if Black Klansman won, but I think A Star Is Born is going to win. Anyone else want to play some bets?
I think Black Klansman's going to win, and I think it should win, and I want it to win.
I like the favorite, but I think it might be a little too weird for everyone. Like, maybe not weird, but it is kind of a more specific movie for a more specific audience, maybe. Based on what people have said so far, either Black Klansman or Star Is Born, probably.
I think that different movies win different roles.
Mm.
And I think the favorite might, and not just because it has two chances, but I think that's the kind of film that a supporting actress will come out of. So I think that's a fair chance that either Emma or Rachel would win that one. But I do agree that I think The Star Is Born, which is huge. It's like it began as a little stream, in the summer of 2018, and now it's become like the Amazon so much.
Yeah.
So I think that it's I don't know if it's a fait accompli, but I would say that. But I would like to see Black Klansman or Black Panther do it. So
I would like to see
I would be delighted if Black Panther won. I'd be laughing to myself for quite some time after the ceremony.
I want to see A Star Is Born. I haven't, and maybe that's my missing. You hear so much about it, but it's one of mine. I'm going to get as soon as it comes out on DVD or maybe digitally before then if it wins or something.
We mentioned trailers. I remember watching the trailer for that. I thought that's just an earnest film. It's just the story is being told. It's not they're not glitzing it up or anything. It's just, come see this movie about two people. And So, yeah, I would like to see it, but I have not.
All right. Well, that's the Pint and Click podcast. We'll see you next time.